Hello and welcome to today's edition of Family Life Today, hosted by Dave and Ann Wilson. Family Life Today is presented by Power to Change, known in the US as Family Life. We hope the program will encourage you in your most important relationships.
All right, so tell me somebody that majorly impacted your life, besides me, of course.
The gym teacher, actually. Her name was Mrs. Brown. And I remember Mrs. Brown came up to me one day, pulled me aside from the gym class, and she said, "Hey, you know, you have something really special. There's an intensity and a competitiveness, but there's something really special about you." And I had never heard anything like that before. And so when she said that, I don't know why those worlds connected a little bit. Like, is there a God? Could he have made me with something unique for something?
Well, she was right. You are competitive. You remember when we first got married and, you know, I would say, "You're just so beautiful." And you'd say, "No, I'm not. I used to think you were kidding." And then I realized you really didn't think that.
I had so many lies
going on.
And
it was all that baggage from the past. But when somebody speaks the words of God and life to you, it changes
identity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It draws you.
And we've got, you can hear her over there.
Yeah.
You can hear Tori Hope Peterson going, She's back in the studio with her husband, Jacob. Man, your book, Fostered, talks about this. But, you know, we got to say, welcome back to Family Life again.
Thank you.
You know, yesterday we got a little bit of your story, so if you missed it, go back and listen to it. But I'll give you a Cliff Notes version. You know, Tori, you ended up in how many? 12 different foster homes. Amazing story, you and Jacob and your kids now, and four-time All-State whatever track star.
Yeah,
author, speaker. But you mentioned a little bit yesterday, and I'd love to hear more about that, what Ann was just saying about your high school track coach. What was his name? Scott?
Scott, yeah.
Yeah, when I was reading about it, I thought, man, he changed your life. Sort of like Mrs. Brown for Ann. Is that what he did when he spoke into you?
Absolutely. There was people who kind of just believed the stereotypes of foster care, that I was a bad kid. When I was in high school, I wanted to go to a friend's house. I wanted her to come to my house, and she went. You know, we didn't have phones then. So she went and asked her dad, and then she came and gave me her answer the next day. And she said, "My dad said that we can't hang out because you're in foster care." And that was just like, okay, I understand what people think about me being in care, and I was kind of labeled like this bad kid.
Is that typical, Tori, for kids in foster care?
I would say it's becoming less typical, right? Because we're having a lot of conversation about prejudice and stereotypes more than we were. So when my track coach, I didn't know this then. People were telling him, like, if you associate yourself with her, you're going to get in trouble, and she's trouble. And he said, like, "I think she's a good kid. Like, I think she has a lot of potential." And I think he could see that God had a plan and purpose for my life. And he told me, "Tori, I think that you can go on to the state track meet. I think you can win it." And I did. And that's what allowed me to get a full ride scholarship to college. And only 3% of youth who have experienced the foster care system go on to get a bachelor's degree or higher.
Wow.
And so he really did change the trajectory of my life.
Let me ask you, Tori, take yourself back to 14, 15-year-old Tori. If we played the recorder of what was going on in your head of your self-talk on a bad day, what did you hear?
I can very easily, like, know those thoughts because I still battle them today. And I still have to, like, remind myself of God's truth. But it's that I'm a sabotager. I ruin everything I touch. I'm not worthy of love. I don't know how to love. And I'm not capable of love. And other people are not able to love me because I'm just too much. I always thought that I was just too much.
I'm so sorry for that. I feel like that can be something a lot of us feel, and even listeners, like, I identify with that, and yet we don't always share it. So you guys end up meeting senior year in college. You fall in love. We talked about this yesterday. You get pregnant, felt bad about it, but you also loved each other, and God blessed you with this amazing little boy, got married. So Jacob, did you have any idea when you guys got married that this was some of the things that Tori was battling with? Because she had given her life to Jesus and surrendered everything.
There was this one time, I think it was Valentine's Day, and I went to the store to get flowers, and I think it was a steak.
Were you married yet? Or
No, we were dating. We were dating at this time, and so I, unbeknownst to me, I pulled out my car out of the driveway of the house I was living in, and I started going dumb. And I went to the store, but apparently Tori had walked to my house and she saw me leave and she thought I was leaving forever.
I had no idea.
Which was a common experience in your life.
It was very strange. It was a very strange day. Yeah. And I think that we hadn't talked like the whole day, which was very unusual. I think you just had like a heavy class load. And then like I was supposed to come to your house at that time. Like you were supposed to be there. But I think you were just running behind and you went to go to the store. And to me, I was like, he's done. Like, he's just done with me. He's leaving me like everybody else. He's leaving me forever. He has different plans today and he's never coming back
because
that's what everyone else is doing.
And because I'm not worthy.
And because, yeah, like I'm not worthy of love.
So how'd you tell him or how'd you find out?
Yeah, how'd that end up?
I think you called me. Did you call me and you were like crying? How did that happen?
I don't even remember. I just remembered that, like, I was distraught. I think I just went to go hang out with friends, but I was still, like, internally distraught. And I was, like, texting. And I was like, you at least tell me you were going to leave or, like, something.
Yeah.
And then I went back to my house, and there was, like, a card and a steak. And he was like, I went to go get you. It was guacamole. You're like, I went to go get you guacamole because guacamole is my favorite. And I was like, I think that that was all my issue. Whatever happened, I was like, I think that was all. That was a Tori moment. So,
but I'm guessing you both have seen like, oh, I didn't know that was there.
Oh, yeah.
How do you guys deal with that? And how, let me ask you, I'll do a two question. How do you deal with that? But also, how do you speak the truth to each other? The good identity, the truth.
We have, like when you say, how do you handle it? I wouldn't say we handle it perfectly or even well. I think we're still navigating it. We haven't even been married 5 years. And so I always feel like we are like the last people anybody wants marriage advice from, truly. But I think something that we've always tried really hard to do is keeping people around us that have good marriages. And then we ask people a lot of questions like, you know, how do you have a good marriage? Why do you feel like you have a good marriage? What do you think you guys do? And a lot of times people just have the same answers. And so you just need like to do those things, like going on date nights and being intentional. There's like that quote or idea that you become like the top five people you hang around.
Yep.
I think we take that very seriously. And we really care to surround ourselves with people who have good marriages, who have strong faith, who are raising their kids like we want to raise our children, who have good character. That's probably, I think, how we primarily get through hard things is we have amazing people. It has probably very little to do with us and everything to do with the people in our lives.
Yeah. That's very fair. We definitely probably model ourselves after what we're seeing and our role models more than we are maybe identifying in each other. I think that can get kind of bumpy, you know, because I know that in our arguments it can get picky really fast. Well, you do this, well, you do that. And now it's hard to identify and really speak encouragement into each other. I think in the future, I would love for us as maturing Christ followers for us to be able to do that for each other. But I think in this early stage of our marriage, right now it's just relying on the body. And the people that God has put in front of us to help us.
I mean, do you feel safe now with each other, Tori? I mean, when he pulls out, do you ever have thoughts anymore or do you feel like we're secure?
No, we're secure. Like, I know Jacob will never leave me and I know that I will never leave Jacob. And I think that's actually because in our very short time of being married, we've been through a lot of hard things. And I would say we've actually taken each other through the ringer. We're like, our marriage is not pretty. It's not perfect. But we love each other. And I know that, like, we'll never give up on each other. One of the things that we've noticed, so both of our love languages is words of affirmation. And I know there's like no science behind the love languages, but I do think that stuff is real. Mm-hmm. Like it is legit. And I think something that we've noticed and that actually we're talking about and working on right now is that when both of your love language is words of affirmation, what you do is you wonder, why didn't this person affirm me? And he's wondering, why didn't Tori affirm me?
Hmm.
And instead, it's like when you speak life into the other, then they're built up and then they start speaking life into you rather than continuing to look at yourself and be like, hello, like, did you see my good works? That's something that
I have something to say to that. I think what's interesting is because both of our love languages is words of affirmation. What's funny is that Tori will affirm me in the ways that she wants to be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So she'll come to me softly and quietly and say, "Hi, honey, you did a really good job," and I just want a good pat on the back.
What's that sound
just
like?
The goods, you know. I just want to.
You're the man.
Good job, man. You know. Hubby, like that's what I want, which is totally different. They're both words of affirmation, but the approaches that we bring to each other. So like when I give you a word of affirmation, it's usually kind of loud and in the form of a song.
But no. But that's what I was. That's what you used to do. But he started to write me letters.
Yes.
Because I love words, and like tangible words that I can go back to mean a lot to me. And so he's writes me letters like every week. And before I go on trips a lot, right, for traveling and speaking. And he'll always put a letter in the book that I'm reading or in my Bible that I take with me.
Mm.
And that's been something that it's really meant a lot to me.
That's really beautiful because it's meeting her need. And then I'm thinking through too, like in terms of your relationship with God, you've given your life to Jesus. How old were you when that happened?
I was 17. And I would say, you know, I know that throughout my life, God was there like a lot. I spent some time in a juvenile detention center, like in juvie. And the only thing that you could have in your jail cell was a Bible. And so I didn't know anything about the Lord, but I'm reading the Bible and I'm reading the book of Colossians and like Paul's in jail. And I'm like, well, I'm in jail. I must be like Paul. And I'm like encouraged. And then I remember there was a scripture that said, be a joyful giver. And I don't know, you know, a lot of people listening to this, they can't see me, but I am mixed. And so my hair is frizzy. And when we were in juvie, we couldn't have any conditioner. We could only have these like little ketchup cups, like the little ketchup cups we used to be able to get from McDonald's of shampoo. And like that didn't work for my hair. So my mom was like calling people. This is how my mom can be really cool. She was calling people and she was like, if you don't get my daughter conditioner, it's going to be medical neglect. And so I ended up getting conditioner and I was like, I'm going to be a joyful giver. And so when the guards weren't looking, I would like squeeze little like conditioner and the other girls like, you know, shampoo. And I know that's like silly, but I really do feel like God was present in those moments and he was encouraging me. And I was like, if Paul can encourage the church of Colossae, I'm going to encourage these girls. And like, but I didn't know, like I didn't give my life to Jesus until I was 17. And that's
what did
I was
you
like,
do to get in juvie?
So my mom and I,
gee whiz, honey, much, you're getting pretty,
I know. No, pretty, you didn't ask that.
Picky here.
My mom was hitting me and I hit her back for the first time and she called the cops and I went to juvie for a domestic violence and I spent 18 days there. And then we went to court. So we went to court for that. And every kid, when they're going to court for something, they get what's called a guardian ad litem. You're probably familiar with that. Or a GAL, foster kids get them or kids that, you know, their parents are going through a divorce. And they had kind of seen that there was something wrong in the home through this experience. And then I had actually went into foster care. I was kind of in and out of foster care since the age of 12. And so this was one of the moments that I went back for a very short stint, ended up in juvie. And my GAL was trying to take me to like these private rooms. And my mom was like banging on the door. She's like, you are not allowed to talk to my daughter alone. And we would go move to another room and my mom was screaming and making just a scene at the courthouse where, you know, there's like cops and judges and people in law enforcement.
And she was afraid
that I would tell them. Mm. And we already had an open case at this time. And so she was afraid that if everything came out, then I would go into foster care. She would go to jail. And my GAL was just like, you can tell me everything. And so I did. And that was the day that I went into foster care for good. And it was actually not because of what I said, but because the judge was like, there's something else going on here if my mom didn't want me to talk to someone by myself, like if she was that upset about it.
So it is amazing that there you are, you get some conditioner, you know, and you're trying to give it away. That's what I'm saying. Like, but you felt like God was wooing you.
Oh, absolutely.
You might not have known him to the point you are now, but he knew you.
I love that word. I really do feel like that is that. I've never used that word, but that's how I feel. I feel like God was just wooing me like my whole life. And it wasn't until I was 17 that I was able to look back and see like, oh, he was there all along.
Yeah.
And I could see him in these moments over and over again where he was protecting me and preparing me and where he was caring for me and where he really was like paving the way for me to be where I am today.
I think of all of our listeners. We've talked to so many that have kids that have gone astray or that are prodigals. And I think it's encouraging to hear stories like that of knowing like, oh, God sees my kids. God sees my spouse. God knows where they are and he will woo them and bring them. And he might give them a little extra conditioner. You know, that could be the way that he's saying, I see you. I see what you need.
Yes.
Well, how is it that, you know, I'm sitting here listening to you going, there's so many others that you know, more than I know, that have gone through a similar experience and they're not sitting here saying God was there, God was wooing. They're saying the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, God abandoned me. And their lives are just fractured, you know, better than anybody.
And yours could have been as
And here you are saying the opposite.
With a great husband, with two kids.
I said that. Like, that is what I said for a really long time. And one of the questions I have, and one of the questions that I think people who feel that way ask is, how can we experience this egregious suffering? How can innocent children experience such pain if God is so good and so loving? And when my foster mom kept taking me to church and kept being faithful, I learned, and it's like a hard truth and some people don't like it, but we are made in the image of God and we are called to reflect Christ. And if that's the case, right, like our suffering is going to bring about glory and we are going to experience suffering as Christ experienced suffering. Like, that's what it means to reflect him. But the hope is, like, we can look at Jesus' suffering and see that there is glory in it, that it was not wasted. And so when we're suffering, when we're going through this pain, we know that God will not waste it, that he's going to be faithful through it. But we have to hold on and we have to hold on to that hope that God is going to finish what he started.
Hmm.
Yeah, it is interesting, too. We said yesterday, you know, your mom, I didn't know some of the details you revealed about your mom today, but even in that, she names you with a name that defines your life, hope. Jeremiah 29:11, I have plans and a hope for you.
So it's and Victoria.
It's this messy, negative, hurtful, and in the middle of that, there's this grace of the thread of God's love coming through even in a name where she blessed you. Even in the middle of all that.
Yeah, and I think that I really do believe that God can work through unbelievers. God can work through broken people. And my mom was very broken, but I feel like it's almost like God gave her a prophecy.
Yeah.
And said, this is what you are going to speak over your daughter. And it rang true. And I think that that's another way I could look back on what God was doing and who he said I was. And just like knowing, okay, he is faithful. He was always there.
As we close, you're talking about your love language being words of affirmation. So let me just say to you, Tori, like it's been pretty amazing to see God's hand on you. Like it's inspiring. And I think part of it, as I look at you, not all of our listeners will be able to see you, but you are a woman of beauty and grace. Like you're petite, but there's a strength inside of you that is beautiful. I feel like God's hand has always been on you. There's been a protection about you and continues to be. And I feel like you listen to him and you'll go wherever he calls you to go. And it's really beautiful to see the impact you're having now, the impact you guys will both have together and then as a family too. It's powerful. Thank you for what you're doing for foster care and being an advocate for kids and families that are fostering. It's been inspiring.
Thank you guys so much for having us. It's an honor.
You know, I really grew to love Jacob and Tori Peterson.
Me too.
We should have said this during the program, but it just reminds me of Genesis 50:20, where Joseph said what they intended for evil, God intended for good.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so much evil and heartbreak that took place in Tori's life. And just, she sits over here across from us and she's full of hope. That's her middle name. and inspiration that God can still do a miracle even out of the muck. He brings, you know, marvelous
beauty,
truths in lives.
Yeah. And their legacy will be totally different. And I love their heart for fostering. I love their heart for family and for life. It's beautiful.
We want to thank Dave and Ann Wilson and their team for another edition of Family Life Today. Although our programs are produced in America, the issues facing families like forgiveness, communication, and taking care of our kids transcend national borders. These issues profoundly affect relationships everywhere. In Australia, family life is known as Power to Change, and our mission is to effectively develop godly families, the kind of families that change the world one home at a time. A key part of our mission includes strengthening marriages and families all around the world. We want to do whatever we can to bring timeless truths to the challenges you face as you seek to strengthen your family and join us in changing the world. Marriage is a beautiful thing when it's working well, but when it's not, it can stretch us beyond what we ever thought possible. Would you be willing to contribute to our Save a Marriage Fund, used to help sponsor everyday Australian couples who are on the brink? To give a gift, please navigate to our website at families.powertochange.org.au under the Helping Couples tab. Until tomorrow at the same time, God's richest blessings on your family.